Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast, doing something different for our early week show this week. Usually on the early week show, we look back at the previous weekend's action, but today we're looking ahead, and we're looking ahead to a very interesting contest opportunity that's happening tomorrow, September 16th, this Thursday, from our friends at Canterbury Park. This is a Breeders' Cup qualifier, Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge qualifier, the likes of which we've really never seen. Our friends at Canterbury, it's a $3,000 buy-in. We've got two guests here to talk about it, to talk about the late pick five on this Thursday card. I'll introduce the guests and we'll talk a little bit more about this contest. And we're going to start off with somebody who has somehow managed to not be on these airwaves yet, even though she's somebody I've wanted to have on for a very long time. From Canterbury Park, we have Angela Herman. Angela, how are things?
I'm excellent. Thank you for having me. I don't know quite how I've dodged you, the Matrix-like move, but I'm glad to be here today, you know, right under the wire. And what better timing than right before the big one at the end of the season?
That's exactly right. And then we have on a man who's been doing a yeoman's job covering Canterbury all season long, been very active on the shows, and also as part of our In the Money Plus service, talking about a guy who also has his own very successful horse racing YouTube channel, Howard Kravitz. Howard, what's going on?
How you doing, PTS and Angela? It's great to be with you guys again. By the way, Angela, the press box handicapping champion, perhaps she could expound on that a little bit. Happy to be on with her.
I love the sound of that, Angela. What's this accolade all about?
Well, each Festival of Champions Day, there is a $20 mythical 20 across the board contest that we all play in the press box. A lot of the people that are involved with our publications, that are involved in the press box, all over the place, really, get involved in it. And it's a 90-10 shot between first and second. And somehow I found a nut and I won. I came up victorious this year. The Oracle, you might have heard of him. He's been a presence in the contest world every time at Canterbury. He got second, but got very lucky. The early part of that card had some prices in it, and I managed to hit a few of them. It gets a little bit chalky, as you know, Stake Red Day is a little bit later in the card, so it was hard to make up any ground after some early scores, and I just eked it out. It was a fun day.
When you're out picking somebody called the Oracle, you know you're doing something right.
If you ever get the chance to come to Canterbury, he's one that you have to meet. He's one of a kind, and I'm proud to beat him. It's not easy, but we have a really good crew up in that press box. So whenever you guys come, please say hello. And the next time you're there, Howard, I have to meet you.
You've got to make
absolutely.
That.
And PTF, I can vouch for that just very quickly. Everyone that I met at Canterbury, I was up there in June. Fantastic people. Minnesota nice is not just a quote; it's an actual truth. Had the chance also to meet Paul Allen, does the announcing, and Jason Gore. Just everyone up there is fantastic. I was treated very well. So thanks again to Canterbury Park for the hospitality they showed me and really everyone they show on a daily basis.
Well, maybe somebody's listening who can make that trip for tomorrow night, because you can play this Big Ten BCBC handicapping contest in a number of ways, one of which is on site. There's also the opportunity to play online. Pay attention. There are deadlines involved here. If you're looking to play on TVG or Naira Bets, you've got to get those entries in by noon central. If you're playing on Express Bet, you have until 3:30, which is also the local deadline time as well. I'm excited about this contest. Angela, share some of the details about this expanded contest format that our friends are putting on for us tomorrow night.
Well, there are some specific rules to it, but you get a $2,000 live bankroll. So it's a $3,000 buy-in. That live bankroll for $2,000 and a $1,000 entry fee are all involved with our card that starts at 4 p.m. So you did mention the deadlines, but there's also specifics for registration. Of course, if you play on site, you register on site. But if you're going to play through ExpressBet, you register through ExpressBet. But for TVG and Naira Bets, you actually have to go to CanterburyPark.com and register. There's a link on the contest page where you can register. And, of course, that is by noon tomorrow. There's also a last chance that's going on tonight on ExpressBet. So for one for every 25 entries is going to get a $3,000 entry into the Big Ten tomorrow. So, I mean, it's a $2,500 entry for a $3,000 entry, and those close before the start of race number five. And, I mean, that's just another way to get involved. But, again, if you do want to play on TVG or Naira Bets, it's noon, 3:30 at Express Bet, and all the specs on what you can play and can't play are also on our website. I recommend taking a look at CanterburyPark.com to get all the specific details, but it's 13 races worth. A lot of opportunity from start to finish to really put yourself ahead. We hope for over 100 entries, but I'll see how the interest goes. We might exceed that pretty early.
10 Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge entries, 2 NHC entries, 10,000 in cash. It's all on the line. We actually made life easy for folks out there looking to get to that page Angela was describing. We made a pretty link. If you go to inthemoneypodcast.com/CBY, that'll take you right to the contest rules, give you all the information you need to know. So check that out, inthemoneypodcast.com/CBY. And thing we like to do around here, Angela, we have the production meeting. Instead of having it before the show, we have it in the middle of the show. And I think, but yes, some of the early birds who are listening to this podcast right when it goes up will have an opportunity to participate in that last chance. But we should definitely, and I'll implore both of you to do this, let's tweet about that last chance as well. Make sure to copy me at Looms Boldly and at In the Money Media, and we'll amplify that tweet and let people know, because I love the idea of getting some folks in. Maybe somebody will hear us, get in at the last minute, and go and win the contest. You know, that happened to me one year with the old Canterbury Dog Days of Summer contest when I was writing for The Place with the Letters, as we affectionately refer to the DRF in these parts. And somebody, I think they were in Chicago, and they read about the contest, drove to Minnesota, and won the darn thing. So who knows? Maybe one of the listeners or somebody we reach on Twitter can follow that pattern of behavior this time around. Just a couple of general questions about Canterbury, and then we were going to dive right into this handicapping. Howard, we're going to pivot over to you. You've been doing a great job following this meet over on InTheMoneyPodcast.com. Just curious if there's any like particular trends or things you're looking to follow or put to use throughout this 13 race card, things that you've noticed through the course of this very successful Canterbury Park meeting.
Sure. Well, it's been a great meet with a lot of exciting races. I think there's two things that stick out to me. And this is actually the first year I've covered Canterbury for a full year, so I'm sure Angela can talk a little more about some of the points that I'll make. I think the dirt track is pretty fair. The times have been very fast, but to say that it's been speed favoring, I don't think would be a fair thing to say. So I think the main track has been pretty fair, although the times have been very quick. The turf course to me stands out as something that has had some bias. Earlier in the meet, it was very hot and very dry, and that turf course can become very speed favoring, depending on the weather situation. Now, as the meet has gone along, they've gotten a little more rain, especially recently, and it's played out more evenly. But I think in general, on the turf course, you want to be forwardly placed. Now, I know the weather has been fine this week. It might be a huge factor tomorrow. Just to bring up tomorrow specifically, there's, first of all, it's supposed to be a lot of wind, which might seem silly to some handicappers, but I've seen at Canterbury Park and other places like Arlington close to me where if there's a huge wind, a tailwind or a headwind in the stretch, it can definitely help or hurt, speed and or closers. So I would just keep in mind, watch earlier in the card. If you're playing the contest, you might want to wait a little bit later in the card to see if there are any bias. That's up to the contest player to decide, but that's something to keep in mind. And the other thing, and I'd love to get Angela's take on this, is because it's the last day of the meet and there are some, trainer standings and jockey, standings on the line, is that a lot of these trainers are bringing back horses very quickly, within a week, 2 weeks. And my question for Angela is, I'm assuming this has been commonly done over the years, but are you going to be for, against, or indifferent about horses like Cinco Star, that we're going to talk about here in a minute, coming back a lot more quickly than they do just to get one more race in the meet?
I'll let Angela answer that one directly when it concerns that runner, and also Howard's general thoughts about Canterbury, see where she weighs in on that.
I think that, at least in Cinco Star's specific case, You look to see how the horse has run on short rest in the past, if they've done so. And I give a little more leeway to horses going long in that situation. I'm fine with them coming back on short rest. Takes a little more out of them, getting a short, hard, fast race into them. And there is one horse that's favored on the card that I'm going to be playing against and Got Even Smarter, who's running for the fourth time in a month. But in a lot of cases, we're not an easy place to ship into. We're not close to really anywhere that these horses are going to be going next. They're going to go to Arizona. They're going to go to Oklahoma. They're going to go to Florida. So people aren't afraid to lose a horse to maybe not bring that one extra on a van. I mean, they're okay with dropping horses in to get one more run at the meet, because it could be a long period of time before they run again. It's just the way that it goes. We're not on a circuit. We're not in New York, where the next week they could go to Belmont and find a similar sort of race that they just ran in. So I don't mind that, and I don't think it's going to play as much into the trainer's race this year as much as it would last year. I mean, Max just has so much more going these last 2 days of the meet than Robertino does. I think he's about 1-5 to get the trainer's title. And Lindy Sure. Wade and Dry Eckleberry are going to be a little bit closer, I think, in the rider's race. They had respectively 28 and 29 mounts into these last 3 days. So I think that's going to get a little bit closer. But it certainly looks like on paper that Mac is going to run away with the trainer's race.
Let's talk about some specifics. Before we get to the pick five, Angela, you'd mentioned off air that there was a race on the undercard you were particularly excited about. And then Howard referred to the morning line favorite in that race, Cinco Star. Why did you want to talk about race two? What do you think is going to happen?
I think that this could really make the solid case for Cinco Star to be our horse of the meet. And he did mention that the horse is coming back off short rest. He just ran a beautiful race in the Blair's Cove on Festival Champions Day. He is going to come back again on very short rest, but he did this last year too. He came out of the Minnesota Sprint where he ran second, and he came back and blew him away on the turf. Now, he's going to run in a pretty similar spot as the Blair's Cove this time around, and it kind of looks like he found a field that doesn't have a bunch of speed. I think a lot plays into the hands of Cinco Star in this spot, and I think that if he runs his race, he'll probably be horse of the meet, or at least be in the top three contention. But I am interested in exactas underneath him, because you could pick an awful lot of closers. And I'm interested in horses named Beat the Heat. You know, if you're going to try to do a big exacta or something, he's one that you'll want to take into consideration, because he hasn't run on the turf since April, and the majority of his good work in his life has been done on the turf. So I'm going to play that. I don't know if I'm going to be in the contest or not, but if I was, I would consider doing some sort of exacta or trifecta in that race under Cinco Star, because parimutuelly, he's kind of useless, but you can use him in exotics.
Looking for a little 10-5 action, or 10 with contenders with 5, it sounds like, from Angela in race number 2 early on in this 13-race card on Thursday night at Canterbury. Let's fast forward a little bit. We'll go up to race number 9, getting down to the sharp end of the contest at this point. We've got a 6-furlong dirt race, 3 and up nickel claimers, but it's a big field of 10, according to the morning line, pretty darn competitive field of 10 at that. Howard, what are your thoughts on this one?
So full disclosure for everyone that's listening, I am playing the contest tomorrow, so I don't know if I want to give away all of my secrets. But by the way, Cinco Star, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but I'll just say it anyway. Cinco Star is going to be my horse of the meet, no matter what happens tomorrow. I think he's just been fantastic. So, even if he loses tomorrow, I think he's probably going to be my horse of the meet that I will vote for. But in race 9, it sure looks like the number 3, Greater Cairo, could get loose. This is $5,000 claimers dropping. The Greater Cairo is dropping down. And according to the time form, U.S. early pace figs should get the lead, which is a very good place to be, obviously, especially if you have a lone lead. But there is a horse that I just want to throw out there. I don't know if I'm going to be using him in the contest or not, or how I'm going to, but the number 5, Side Street Dave, who's 15-1 morning line, has some dirtied up form. Last two has been on the turf, which he's 0-6. He doesn't want to do that. And then the race before that, he was racing in the mud, going long again. If you go back to his, sprint efforts at Fauner and other places, he's not that bad. I would just throw the number 5, Side Street Dave, in there as possible bomb in your exactas or trifectas to spice up a bet if you happen to be playing the contest. And also using the pick 5, which, by the way, race 9 starts, the 10% industry low takeout, late pick five.
Thank you for throwing that in there, Howard. I was almost going to give myself a host fail for not mentioning those low exotic
takes.
We appreciate that. Angela, how do you see it? Is it as simple as Greater Cairo, Loose and Lonely in race number 9?
I agree with the part of him getting the lead. I think that he'll get clear for at least a little while, but I think a lot depends on how much Quincy Hamilton and Derek Felix can put on him as far as pressure, or Carlo Lopez and Digital Star. If one of those scratches, Greater Cairo should be in front for at least 5 furlongs. I don't love him going 6, but I think he's the horse to beat. I took him 2nd. I took Never Blink on top, one that you didn't mention at all. Kevin Danger doesn't win a whole bunch of races, but this horse also is, I think, at least on the upturn of his form. A lot of these have had a lot of starts already this year, 7, 8, 9, 10 starts. Never Blink has only run twice. So perhaps there's a little more upside with him. The price will be a little more appealing. And if you are going to use Greater Cairo, I would say at least use Never Blink underneath him. I think that he'll probably get away on the board, maybe 5 to 6 to 1. And that's the only horse that I could picture running Greater Cairo down. I don't think that Master Guns is going to do it. I think he'll put in a good try, but you see all of the seconds and thirds to go along with those two wins. He's a pass for me on top, but I had it down to 1-3.
Let's move on to race number 10. We stay in the claiming rank, $7,500 this time around, 6.5 on the dirt. And Angela, we'll keep it with you.
The 10th is a tough one for me. I ended up with Sharp Art, not creative. I think that he's a horse who's established that he doesn't run his best races on a wet track. That's what he got thrown at him last time. It was very muddy. He just didn't look like he leveled out quite the same as he does on a fast track. But I was a little more interested in a price with Parolee. And Parolee comes off a 4th place finish where basically Negron was standing up at the finish line. He didn't have anywhere to go. He tried to weave between horses. He probably had more to give. He does take a little class uptick, but they have to do that. I mean, we have only a few races that were even in the book on this one. There's 7 extras that filled on this card. So it's not like anybody was aiming for these sort of spots. Mm-hmm. You can't necessarily pick your price. I think he's still a good enough fit at $7,500, where if you're looking for a bomber, Parolee will fit that bill. Now, it all kind of starts with Calculating King, because he's the one making the biggest drop. But I'm curious what you two think about Calculating King on the drop and how he'll fit into this, especially from a pace standpoint.
Oh, we'll kick that question right to Howard.
Well, Calculating King, I don't love the drop, obviously, down to 7,500. But, Angela, this seems to be one of those cases where just Robertson's trying to, you know, make sure he wins the training title, which it looks like he's going to. But the fact that he put, you know, Alonzo Quinones on him gives me some confidence. This horse has a ton of back class. I mean, if Calculating King is anywhere near what he has in the past, he's run buyers in, you know, high 70s. He's got an 80 buyer. Granted, those were Will Rogers, so you can make for that what you think. But I do like the fact that Calculating King has 2 works since his last start. I just think he's going to be pretty tough if he's right. And I agree with you. There's a lot of other places to go. I think the 5, Awesome Emmett, again, has been involved in some very fast fractions during this meet. If he breaks well, I think he is not absolutely impossible, 12-1 morning line. Sharp Art can win. I'm not a huge fan of 9-year-olds at this time of year, although this is not your normal 9-year-old because he continues to run well. But, you know, a 9-year-old coming back relatively quick, that gives me a little bit of, you know, cause for pause.
Fair enough.
Throw a bone to an 8-year-old.
You know, it's 1 year younger.
Fair point. Awesome Emmett is 8. These are cool horses. I mean,
but has not run in a month. Horses. But you're right.
It's, you can argue it either way. But I mean, you know, what I would say about that is anytime, and you know, those kind of softer angles, I will be much more interested in when they're like talking me off a horse that's going to be at the one of the top lines of the betting than a horse that's a long shot. But it is funny. It is patently absurd to split the hair between 8 and 9, like from an objective standpoint. But I totally get it in the context of trying to figure out what you're going to do in a competitive race. So I wrote down, Angela, for you, 8-4-6 in race 10, and Howard, for you, I wrote down 6-5. Does that sound right on both instances?
Sure, I've 6-5-8. I do have Sharp Art as an A, just for the record.
Okay. There we go. All right, let's talk about race number 11 at this point as we move on to stakes action. Two-year-old stakes action in this case. We've got 6 furlongs on the dirt with 50,000 in the pot. And Howard, we're going to send it right back your way to see who's going to get the money.
Yeah, interesting race here because we have some fillies that are in the race along with colts, which I always like seeing the two. Missy Needs a Cocktail. What a great name. Pete, right up your alley right there.
I do like that.
Is a filly. Cost $80,000 to Keeneland September sale. This horse is by Bernardini out of a Stormy Atlantic mare. Bred by Godolphin, by the way. So it's great. I'll say one thing. I'm sure Angela would agree. We have seen some very well-connected horses this meet and some really strong sires. I mean, American Pharoah's had some, you know, babies run this meet. We've had some really high-quality sires. The Minnesota bred program really is quite impressive, I have to say. Another filly is number 5, Run Happy, out of Run Happy, who won. And my top choice is another filly in this race, the number 7, Summer Lightning for Deodoro. Was an open company race, actually, last few times. He's a Kentucky bred, but he was at Prairie Meadows, ran very well there in their Golden Lassie, broke maiden at Louisiana Downs. Has been at Lone Star. This is a very fast horse, gets a nice outside stalking trip, has been working also two local works over the strip at Canterbury. So I think Summer Lightning is going to be very tough here. But my second choice would be a gelding in this race, the number 3, Cause I'm Leaving, who broke his main last name with a fantastic 68 buyer, had trouble getting out of the gate in his first two, but last time broke like a shot from the outside and looked like a, you know, a serious racehorse. And also gets Rye Eckleberry on him tonight, a jockey change. So I think at 9-2, the number 3, Cause I'm Leaving, especially if he breaks well, has a big shot to upset one of the fillies here.
Sounds like 7-3 on your top line with wanting to keep the 2 and the 5 potentially on side as well. Does that sound about right?
The 1 is non-possible also. It's the other Deodoro. I actually go 7-3-5 here.
All right, 7-3-5 will be the numbers for the official top line of the betting. Lots of votes for girl power for Howard. How about you, Angela? How do you see this one playing out on the track tomorrow night?
Oh, yeah, I got Phillies 1-2-3. Girls rule. But the very first horse he mentioned is actually going to be my top pick in the Shakopee Juvenile. Now, this was one of the book races I went, and so I'm okay with a little bit of time between starts, and Missy Needs a Cocktail has not run since the end of July. I understand that. I don't love it, but this is a blueprint that's worked really well for Mac Robertson. He's won 3 of the last 4 Shakopee Juveniles with fillies. He's 3-for-9 at Canterbury, running horses into stakes in their second race. He's never been worse than 4th, but this has been his strong suit, the Shakopee Juvenile specifically. And I remember when Missy Needs a Cocktail broke her maiden. You don't usually get much out of Mac or anybody in his barn, but his assistant smiled when she left the winner's circle and said, yeah, she's fast. You don't generally get any words out of them whatsoever, but she got the stamp of approval from the barn right away. They won this with Heart Full of Soul. They won this one with Sassy Seneca. And Missy Needs a Cocktail just has a lot of the same traits to her that those former winners did. Luis Negron will get on her. I know that Nick Goodwin departs for Bitcoiner, who's also usable in this spot. But the fact that they started her off in one of our first 5-furlong 2-year-old races signaled that she learned her lessons very well early. They just got a good bullet work into her out of the gate. I don't think I'll get 6-1, but I think that Missy Needs a Cocktail is a fair play around 7-2, 4-1. I did take Summer Lightning second for all the reasons you mentioned. She's got experience, she's got speed, and she's got an outside post, further outside of Missy Needs a Cocktail. Running Happy came from off the pace in a very professional effort in her first start. She's coming back with some different circumstances. She's going to have a dry track to work with. She's going to have a further outside draw. The inside was deep the day that she won, so Running Happy definitely ran a big race in her debut. But I think it'll take a big effort to run down Missy Needs a Cocktail, who might just run them off their feet.
Makes a lot of sense. And with that wind in play, and I'm definitely somebody who believes that wind can be very significant in terms of track biases and whatnot, I would, feel a lot better if the wind seems to be helping those front runners get home with that kind of trip. If that kind of trip is working, I can definitely see that case. Very interesting to see a daughter of Bernardini, you know, acting that well around five. She's supposed to get better as the distances get longer, you would think. Let's move on to race number 12. We've got a Minnesota bred allowance race for runners three and up, going 6 furlongs on the dirt. Angela, who's your idea of the winner?
I took Fire Extinguisher in the start. Fire Extinguisher was one that they had a lot of hope for early in his career. Things did not go the same way when they started off this season, but he's one that wants to be close to the front. That fits a lot of the different runners in here, but I think that he and Rye Eccleberry will be sitting either first or second early on. He ran such a big race last time in getting his second win. It's a realistic spot. They put him in here. They don't, you know, plunk him to the bottom or anything like that. And I think that Fire Extinguisher is one that you need to at least use in exactas or trifectas. And I think you probably will get around 9-2. Got Even Smarter is the morning line favorite. And he's the one I mentioned earlier, is going to be running his fourth race in a month. And he's been running well, but he gets Israel Hernandez in here. Luis Negron is going to ride the two instead of riding Got Even Smarter. There's just a couple red flags on this horse. So I went 8, 10, and 7. May We All should be able to pick up the pieces if things completely fall apart. Rocket Wrench, Broberg, and Ruben Fuentes have had an excellent meet together. It's very much a race that he could win. I would prefer him at 6.5 rather than 6. So I took it 8, 10, and 7.
Howard, how do you see it?
I'm very interested in the 7 Weston's Wildcat here. I agree with Angela that Fire Extinguisher probably is going to have the lead, but I don't see a lot of early gas other than Fire Extinguisher. And boy, the number 8 Fire Extinguisher has major distance questions, in my opinion. That last win was only going 5 furlongs. This is a tougher field going 6. Weston's Wildcat has been very good. By the way, 10-1 morning line, the number 7, Weston's Wildcat, has been racing very well last 3 starts. 1 finished 2nd by 3/4 and 3 by half length. I think Arroyo's going to have this horse just sitting right off of Fire Extinguisher. At least that's my hope. Also has a bullet work since his last run and has not run in a month. So I'm either going to be very right or very wrong tomorrow about some of these horses, you know, coming back quickly or getting more rest. But I'm very interested in Weston's Wildcat at a price. I hope everyone in the contest is not you. It's the 7 Weston's Wildcat. I hope he's like 15-1. I also agree that the number 6 Got Even Smarter is 3-1 morning line, but is probably an underlay here and will be over bet. And also, again, another horse that, as Angela mentioned, has raced many times and raced 2 weeks ago. So again, I'm looking for horses with a little more rest, with a little more upside. I also think the 9 and 10 are not impossible. It's a very, very interesting top race.
7 is a strong top pick, it sounds like. And then the 9 and the 10 more on the B line. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, I would go 7, 9, 10.
Excellent. But with strong preference for the 7. I'm not exaggerating that, right?
No, I think you're going to get a price. I mean, the jock is only 9 for 139 this meet, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It's lower, you know, connections. But there's some things I think are interesting about the 7. He's also, by the way, turning back. He ran a mile last time. Turning back is a big angle for me as well.
Let's talk about race number 13, which will close out the night. It will close out this this handicapping contest we've been talking about throughout the show. We've got Nickel Claimers, 3 and up, a mile and 70 yards. Howard, how are we going to get paid in this pick 5?
Well, as you know, you've written books on handicapping contests, so obviously you know that most likely the whole shebang and all these seats are going to be up for grabs and come down to this very last race. So this is a race that if you're playing in the contest especially, or even if you're just playing the late pick 5, you obviously want to pay attention very carefully to. It's a big field of 11. It's a tough field. I think there's quite a bit of speed in this race with the 4 Musky Man and some others in here that are going to go. So I like the number 3, Mischievous Mo, 7-2 morning line. It's been consistent at this level. Gets Fuentes, who's been on this horse before. He's on him last time. I just want a horse that's going to be, you know, closing. I think this horse has enough closing kick. So I'd be interested in number 3, Mischievous Mo. Another horse that is going to be interesting how they bet that I think will probably be up close is the number 6, Outer Banks, who's 5-1 morning line for trainer Joel Byrne, gets Hernandez in the saddle. This horse has been sprinting mainly, but this horse is by Empire Maker out of a Johannesburg, you know, mare. So you would think, especially on the sire side, this horse could get the distance. I'm interested to see how the number six, Outer Banks, handles the distance and a huge drop in class as well. So I'm going to be focusing mainly on 3-6. But again, there are many, many different ways you can go in this last race of the meet.
Angela, what do you think is going to win this get-out race for us tomorrow night?
Well, I didn't think that there were as many ways to go. I took 6-2-3. I did try Outer Banks. Kind of a big, not the most coordinated horse in the world. Obviously, he was an attractive auction buy. China Horse Club decided he was worth 700 grand. That didn't work out, and Miguel Silva bought him for 20. So they've been kind of floating around that level until he got claimed two back. And he didn't run a bad race in his second lifetime start. You know, it's not easy to run two turns your second lifetime start, but he ran a pretty even third. He kind of just runs at one pace. He flattened out last time going five, but this is a good move for Joel Byrne too. He can definitely stretch a horse out. He set it off big, big layoffs too. I mean, he knows how to get a horse ready to go around two turns. So I think that Outer Banks towards the front end, like you said, fell into a group that isn't overloaded with pace. I mean, you got a couple of maidens. Unbridled Shoes might have the lead, but I don't think Outer Banks is going to be far behind. Mischievous Mole probably won't be either coming out of that one-turn race. Graphite is the most confusing horse to me. I did use him second. The Silva Barn has been doing very well over the last couple of weeks. They've been hitting like 20-25%. But Graphite's maiden win leaves a bit to be desired. It wasn't the best race in the world. I will use him, but I think that Outer Banks is going to get a good pace-pressing trip. Israel Hernandez, got to know him a little bit last time, and the class drop was just too much for me to pass up. I took it 6-2-3, but I'm with you. I saw it kind of setting up the same way. So
Graphite's a little
interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think Graphite's just a little interesting on that idea if finishing is really going to come into play, just like in terms of a horse that has, you know, on the best races anyway, some decent decent closing ability. Maybe more for underneath than to win, but if you think there's a chance that the pace could really unravel, I certainly understand the three numbers that are being discussed in here, the 6, the 2, and the 3, to close things out at Canterbury. Closing thought from you, Angela, on this Canterbury meet. Very glad we got you in here just under the wire on it. Any message for the listeners?
Well, I hope everybody can join in. There's lots of different ways to get involved. So check out CanterburyPark.com. That's your jumping off point. Check out when the deadlines are, what the rules are for the contest. If you got 3,000 burning a hole in your pocket, there's no better way to spend it. But I do have a question for you, being, you know, both of you actually, being the contest minds that you are. I want to know, in your opinion, after looking through this card, discussing it a little bit, what do you think will be the score in Kent? I want to know what you think the threshold is to take home an entry to the BCB.
Oh, wow. That's a really good one.
I'll let Pete has a lot more you know, experience with the contest than
It's always very changeable.
I'll let him answer,
yeah, it's but. Very, very changeable. You know, I love that this is a flat prize pool, so I'm glad you brought that up. Because that's something I think can be very player friendly. A lot of times when all the money is at the top, you'll see, you know, some outsized scores and people chasing to try to get there in an event, obviously, like the BCBC itself. Oh, I mean, what's it going to be? It's going to be like 5 times the initial bankroll sounds too high. That would be 10,000. What about 7,500? Do you like that? I mean, I'm just guessing here, obviously.
I think that sounds about right. I will say, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead, Andrew.
No, I was going to say, I leave it to you. You have played many more live bankroll contests than I have, and that was the question I had for both of you.
Yeah, that
I was just going to mention, and Pete, if you want to talk more about this, the fact that, you know, you got field sizes here of 11, 12, 9, 10, 11. I mean, the chance of some big prices coming in some of these races, I think might, you know, it could blow up the tote board, and I think you might have to, you know, raise that number just a little bit because of the field sizes here.
Yeah, that's not an unreasonable opinion. I mean, a lot of it depends on what happens, but, you know, sometimes in a live bankroll event. It's not like Mythical Money where everybody's just going to be on the horse because of the price that it is on the board. Somebody's got to have the gumption to go after it and make that strong play. So it can cut both ways. And obviously, you talk about the field size in the races, the field size in the contest itself. It'll be super interesting to see how many we get and what eventually happens. But yeah, I'm looking forward to watching it play out. I love the idea of having this major Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge qualifier on a weeknight. It's something different and exciting, and we'll be following, you know, hopefully both of your progress with great interest. A closing thought from you, Howard, before we send this thing home.
I just want to publicly congratulate Angela, Brian Aragone, everyone on the TV side, everyone up in the press box for a fantastic meet. If you don't watch their simulcast feed and see the job they do from all the way from, you know, the paddock to the post, it's just a fantastic watch. So just congratulations to Angel and the rest of the team, Jeff Madej and media relations, anyone that I've not mentioned, for running a great meet. And there's no better way to end a meet than a huge contest. So they've done the right thing from a PR standpoint. They have fantastic crowds. There's some of the best crowds in the country show up to Canterbury Park. The fans are fantastic. They turn out, they do it the right way, low takeouts, etc. So just kudos to Canterbury Park for a great summer.
And I'll second that. It's been a pleasure working with Andrew Offerman and Jeff Madej and the team over there. We've been covering them all meet, and hopefully we'll get to do more next year and have a chance to celebrate some real success in this contest tomorrow. One more time, if you want to hear more about the contest, inthemoneypodcast.com/CBY. But for now, I'm going to thank Angela Herman one more time. You'll see her on your simulcast feed. We'll thank Howard Kravitz again. You can hear more from him over at inthemoneypodcast.com and at his own HHH horse racing channel over there on YouTube. We'll thank our friends at Canterbury Park in general for being our sponsors this season, and our longtime partners, our founding partners, including the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation and 10 Strike Racing. You know how we always like to root for the purple and black around here. And if you want to support the amazing mission of TRF, you can go to trfinc.org/players to do just that. And we even have a couple bottles of our rye whiskey left if you're interested in making a donation large enough to get us to send you a bottle of that. We'll be doing another mailing probably like next month, I'd say. So not a bad time to go over there, trfinc.org/players. That's going to do it. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Cotney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornatel. May you win all your photos!